You're listening to the Myth Cream Podcast with your hosts, Oren Ashkenazi, Mike Hernandez, and Chris Winkle.
There was a castle by a waterfall with a pink and purple wall and a princess living there. She had no parents and was all alone. She got by on her own and she liked it pretty well. 'Cause she never wore socks. She had a pet snake. She bought her a guitar and she ate a whole cake. And there wasn't anybody there to tell her what to do. So she did what she wanted to. Everybody knew the story of the princess who saved herself.
This episode is brought to you by our patrons, Ari Ashkenazi and Professor of Political Theory in Star Trek, Kathy Ferguson.
Welcome to the Myth Cream Podcast. I'm Chris, and with me are...
Mike.
And...
Oren.
And today, I have to say that though some of us normally don't seem that important and we don't seem like heroes, we like to imagine that we could be heroes, or anybody could be a hero, especially characters in stories that are not heroes now. What about you guys?
Okay, so I think we should just sing that Captain Hammer song from Dr. Horrible. You know, everyone's a hero in their own way, right? You just start singing. Just play some of that over
this.
It'll be
this
great.
We're talking about superheroes for a third time in a row, right? Okay,
yeah,
good, because I'm still wearing the spandex.
Yeah, we're talking about side characters who could be the main character, but only if they already have superpowers.
Well, that flies in the face of one of my ideas.
No, okay. So, one of you guys want to bring up somebody first? What's a side character that you imagine being a main character?
Okay, I've got one. Alright, so this is a character from the show Lost Girl, and her name is Mackenzie, and she is the sidekick to the actual main character, whose name is Bo. And there's a couple of reasons why Mackenzie needs to be the main character. The first is that Bo is boring.
Bo is terrible.
She's just not great. She's a succubus, but weirdly that translates into her just being like a super badass. Like that's what she does. She just like punches her way through every problem. And she has this weird thing about like insisting that she's going to be neutral between the good court and the evil court, even though she sides with the good court all the time and like it clearly expects them to help her.
She's like a superhero who like also has sexy times occasionally on the show.
Yeah. Basically, yeah. Whereas so Mackenzie is her sort of her sidekick. But Mackenzie is actually a human. Like, she doesn't have any fey powers, right? She's just, like, a smart person. And she's very resourceful, and she's basically a thief. Like, she has lockpicking skills and, like, sleight of hand. She can sneak around. And I think she's just a much more interesting character, because, like, she is out of her depth, right? Whereas nearly any enemy they run into, Bo is capable of just, like, punching them down, right? And, like, worst case scenario, after she punches them, she'll have to, like, you know, go have sex to heal up, right? It's not really a very threatening situation, whereas Mackenzie doesn't have any of these powers. Having her be a human actually gives her a reason to do the whole I'm gonna stay neutral thing, because, you know, because neither court wants a human in it. And, honestly, I'm actually kind of imagining her as a Harry Dresden type character, where like they already do the whole like they already kind of run a private investigating agency, but because again the main character is all brawn, they don't really do a whole lot of investigating. They mostly do a lot of fighting. So whereas having a character like Mackenzie, who needs to think on her feet and mainly use her wits, I think would give us a chance to really have a more interesting and intelligent show. And if you wanted, you could have her develop powers later if you need that for your big finale, right? Like maybe she has some kind of secret fey ancestor she didn't know about or whatever, or she gets into like, you know, she gets bit by a radioactive fey or something.
So I have a character on my list that is very similar to that. That is Stiles from Teen Wolf.
Oh, yeah.
So, Teen Wolf, the central character is Scott, who ends up being... He gets lots of candy. He ends up being this, like, badass, like, werewolf pack leader. And they make a big deal about how he's, like, a true, you know, alpha who becomes an alpha without, like, killing another alpha and taking his powers. It's really... But, like, I think he suffers from the same things that Bo does. It's because he has, like, this specialness that they just assigned to him. They don't feel the need to make his character very interesting. He's very generic. And it was kind of hilarious because I was having a conversation with a friend who never watched the show but likes to read the fan fiction. And when I talked to them, they were like, wait a second, Scott is the main character of the show? Like, they didn't even know, because the fans don't focus on Scott because he's too boring, right? Like, you would never know from reading all the fan fiction that Scott is actually the main character. And they were, like, really surprised by this.
That's amazing.
And so, but Styles is the only person, they have this sort of eclectic pack, and they don't really establish if there's actually some sort of magical binding that makes a pack, because they're just a group of friends. Whereas it feels like other packs have something a little bit more magically official. But in their pack, Styles is the only one who is just human. You know, everybody else is, you know, a were-coyote or a banshee or, you know, something else. But he's just the person. But he's also just the most interesting character. His father is the sheriff, and he does a lot of, like, investigative work.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just kind of, he's very intelligent, but also very quirky. And just, he has, like, again, he has some big challenges. And they do sometimes focus the conflicts on him. In season 3, part 2, it's all about, he has this sort of, he's possessed by this demon, and there's a kind of, like, this evil version of him running around.
I hate it when that happens.
So he definitely can hold a conflict. But yeah, he reminds me in that way a lot about, like, Mackenzie. Whereas because they did not give him an actual power or make him non-human in some way, they were forced to actually make him just interesting because of his personality. And it would be nice if they would do that with characters that did have cool powers. I think if I were to make him the main character, I would try to build in, not necessarily make him, convert him into a werewolf. He has a really interesting sort of arc where he kind of, like, even though he sort of wants to be a werewolf for the glory of it, he still turns it down. Yeah, no, it is actually very interesting. But there are some, there's some druids in the setting, and I don't know if they're born or made, but they, like, sort of kind of know some, like, spell work and are very savvy about the creatures in the setting, so it would kind of make sense for him to maybe go in that direction.
Yeah, you want to give him enough ability that he can actually hold his own, right? And, like, I think if you were going to make Mackenzie the main character of Lost Girl, one of the other things you would have to probably do is make her a little more badass than she is. Like, she doesn't have to be a Terminator, right? But, like, I would say give her the ability to fight a little bit more than she has now, right? Like, make her decent with a sword or something. And, like, she could even have a succubus friend that she calls in when she needs a heavy, right? Like, that, like, I think that would be a better role for Bo anyway. It would fit with her character better. Mike, do you have one? Is it from Star Wars?
Yes. You called it. It is from Star Wars.
Aha. Is it Admiral Akbar?
No.
No? Oh.
Admiral Akbar was a red herring for you, Oren.
Ooh.
No, it's a rather obvious one, Obi-Wan, in the prequels. They would have been...
Wait, is he not already the main character in the prequels?
No, it is supposed to be Anakin. But, and it's very clearly supposed to be Anakin in episode one, well, Qui-Gon and Anakin, and Obi-Wan's kind of in the background, even being left behind on the ship.
Yep.
And then in episode two, they really tried to keep Anakin the focus, but Ewan McGregor just steals the movie and continues to do so in episode 3, but it's still written as if Anakin is the person that we should be caring about the most, and as if it's his arc that is the most important, when I think the movie would have been much better with a refocus on Obi-Wan.
This is true. I mean, part of the reason that's true is that the prequels are so bad that almost any change would be positive. But I agree, especially in episode one, because what the hell is a Qui-Gon Jinn? Like, why is he here? I remember Obi-Wan saying that Yoda taught him. I don't remember him saying, was I any different when Qui-Gon Jinn taught me? That's not something that I remember happening.
Qui-Gon Jinn sounds like a space ale.
It does a bit. So, like, just erasing Qui-Gon Jinn from episode one, I think, goes a long way towards improving it. Because, like, frankly, Qui-Gon Jinn's motivations are kind of nonsensical anyway, yeah. Right?
Yeah, and it gives Obi-Wan more development if he's the one who was really set on finding this, like, chosen one person and then finds out how horribly wrong he is.
As opposed to resentfully taking him on because his master promised to and then died.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Thanks, Qui-Gon, for dumping this on
me. Okay, so skip episode one completely. Start with them at their episode two ages.
Wait, can we skip episode two also?
Well, I mean, we're completely rewriting episode two. We're not just skipping it.
Okay.
But yeah, start at Obi-Wan as a full Jedi Knight and having a beard.
Yes, beard is necessary.
Because he is much hotter in episode two than in episode one.
Concur.
So we start there. We start in the same way that episode one did not bring in Anakin until about a third of the way through the movie. Start this with Obi-Wan on his own, clearly the main character, and then an older Anakin, not a 10-year-old, being the potential Jedi for Obi-Wan to train, but it still remains focused on Obi-Wan. That, I think, would be a much stronger starting off point for the prequels.
If nothing else, they would be much more focused, right? Because one of the problems with episode one of its many problems, is that it is really scattered over like a bunch of characters, only some of whom are going to reappear in the next movie anyway. And like Obi-Wan, like frankly, Obi-Wan's the character we're there to see, right? Like he's the one, we don't really, you know, Anakin is potentially interesting, but like he's a downfall arc, whereas Obi-Wan is our natural protagonist.
Right. And we're instantly, you know, turned against the downfall arc as being our primary interest anyway when you introduce him as a 10-year-old. Because how, like, it is a huge jump from Pod Racer Annie to Darth Vader. It is much more believable, a brooding young adult being a potential Dark Lord of the Sith.
And like, especially if that's where you start knowing him, right? And like you can really focus more on, like, when they first meet, if you can focus on Obi-Wan and maybe some of the mistakes that he makes, when training Anakin, that's another thing that could be, you know, that has potential, that if you can get more if you focus on Obi-Wan.
Obviously, Obi-Wan, he's already introduced in the original trilogy, and he has, like, obviously an interesting backstory and regrets and all those things that just make for a good, like, main character in a prequel work. Whereas, like, Anakin, like, he has the intrigue of becoming Darth Vader, but, like, it's still a fresh character that you have to get the audience attached to.
Right. And first movie did them such a disservice because, like, thinking back on it, first half of episode two is basically them undoing the image of little boy Annie in all of his interactions with Padme.
Right.
That's the whole focus for their first half of the movie is erasing that image of the little boy who goes yippee.
And because they wasted the first movie with him being a tiny child, they aren't able to plant any of the seeds of his downfall in the first movie, right? Because he's a tiny child.
Right.
So he has to turn evil really fast in the second one, right? It's like, he went from being, like, normal guy to, I killed them all, even the children, right?
Everyone gets angry sometimes, Oren.
No, that's, no, stop.
Yeah, I mean, and if they had just, like, They insist, the Jedi Council in the first movie insists that, like, he's full of, like, dark emotions or something, but, like, you don't see that.
Nope.
He doesn't look like that. It's really hard to believe that he would become this, like, dark and brooding teenager. Like, you don't know, it's like, what happened to him? You were removed from slavery. I mean, it would have been sad to say goodbye to your mom, but, like, just what made you so angry during that time? Whereas if they had showed him as, like, a child, like, hey, he's got the sunny disposition sometimes, you know, or something. Mm-hmm. It would have been, felt a lot better. But, yeah, really, they shouldn't have started that early.
Now, Chris, I think you might have a Star Wars example, too. Would you care to share that with us?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the original trilogy, the obvious person who deserves to be the star is Leia.
Oh, not Chewbacca? I was really sure. I was really sure.
Chewbacca would make an interesting main character, but, yeah, Leia is obviously in a very central position because she is one of the leaders of the rebellion, actually one of the leaders of the rebellion, and she's an ambassador who goes into enemy space, and she actually knows how to do things. She's very confident. She gets things done. She has her entire planet blown up.
And has time to comfort Luke because, like, an old man that Luke met, like, a week ago is dead.
yeah. The way I see the Leia story going is, so you need to have, like, right now the planet blows up and it doesn't affect her character at all, right? Whereas you want the planet to blow up in a way that develops her character. So I guess I would take Leia as a character that is originally involved in politics, but is perhaps for whatever reason reluctant to go all the way to the rebel side. Maybe she thinks that she can sort of do good by bridging the gap between different factions or something like that. Then her planet gets blown up, and that sort of gives her the motivation to go rebel all the way. And then her, like, reckless and flaky brother shows up. Long lost brother just shows up to be her Jedi mentor.
I was actually going to ask, does Luke need to be in this version where Leia is the main character?
Yeah, because she needs a mentor to learn Jedi powers.
Okay. All right. Okay.
And Luke is an ideal mentor because he's not reliable. Because he would, like, show up and then keep disappearing to go on foolish missions that he shouldn't go on.
Okay. All right.
So it's like, because you need the mentor to be somebody who isn't, like, always there to solve problems for the protagonist. And they do that with Obi-Wan by having Obi-Wan dying.
Yeah.
Right? But for Luke and Leia, just having, again, they show him as very, like, impulsive. And he goes off where he shouldn't. And so having him sort of, okay, so her long-lost brother shows up. He's like, hey, I have Jedi powers and you can be a Jedi too. Starts training her. Then, like, it's the Empire easily goads him into leaving. Because he's easily goaded.
Yeah, it's like, hey, I heard there was this, like, battle station that had, like, this secret weak spot that only, like, a real badass could hit. I'm gonna go see what I can do about that, right?
Right. And then he gets himself into trouble, and then she has to use her, like, you know, political savvy and other, you know, new Jedi powers to try to, like, get him out of it. So, like, yeah, so I think that would be a good dynamic, and he would make a mentor that had enough inherent, like, conflict in it that he wouldn't just stand around and solve problems for her. Because if you look at the kind of the dark sides of his character in the original trilogy, there's plenty to make him just an unreliable person.
Now, so two questions. In this version with Leia as the main character, is she also a fighter pilot, or, like, or are we going to focus more exclusively on her political side?
I mean, I would be inclined to focus on the parts of the character, like, preserve what parts of her character that we can, right? Because, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we can make Leia a fighter pilot, but, like, she's not really Leia anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We've made her a different character by that, I feel like, by that time. Whereas, clearly, her, when we see her and introduce her, she's a person who is in a leadership position and knows how to work with people and negotiate with people in various ways. And it's never front and center because the original Star Wars trilogy, right, is just a kind of adventure story.
Right. Now, does another question, does Han Solo need to exist in this version? And if so, what role does he play?
The beautiful love interest, Orin.
Obviously,
yeah,
the ingenue.
Yeah, I mean, I would be inclined to keep Han Solo and just reposition him as somebody who is attractive. He can be the eye candy for the women.
So if we're repositioning this to be about, say, Leia needing to get Luke out of trouble, right? Because Luke's a hothead and he's like, you know, thinks he can just take the Empire on by himself. And Leia's like, okay, I gotta go rescue my brother and take down the Empire. You know, it might benefit her to have like a mercenary that she could hire, who happens to look good in some tight pants. You know, that could be a thing.
Yeah. I think I would go in that direction. Maybe it would be because in the current original trilogy, like, Luke reluctantly allies with Han Solo in order to get what he needs to do done. So maybe Leia does that. Or maybe Han Solo has already brought Luke to where Luke wanted to go, and then Leia tracks Han Solo down in order to find Luke.
All right, I'm into that. I'm into it. So another one that I've got, which is doesn't require quite as much rewriting as Chris's idea, is Commander Susan Ivanova from Babylon 5.
Now,
Okay. So Babylon 5 is a pretty good show. I like Babylon 5, but it has its weak link is its commander, both its commanders actually, because it has two. In its first season, it has Commander Sinclair, or as I like to call him, Commander Monotone. Because I don't know if it's the acting or the directing, but he only has one tone of voice. Like, he doesn't change it. He's always like, this is very serious, and this is what we're doing, and this is how I talk at all times. You can only tell he's mad because his voice gets louder. It doesn't really change in tone at all.
And he scowls a little bit.
Yeah, he does scowl a bit. And he has, like, some weird story about how, like, he's part of this weird plot where Mimbari alien souls are being born into human bodies, and, like, That was really clashed with the show's sci-fi aesthetic. We never find out about where that was going because the actor left at the end of season one very abruptly. Like, he doesn't even have a goodbye episode. He's just gone at the beginning of season two. Now, in the actual show, they bring in a new guy, Commander Sheridan, or Captain Sheridan, actually, or as I like to call him, Captain Candy, because the show just cannot stop talking about how amazing he is. And he's like, you know, suppose he's like the only Earth commander who was able to destroy a Mimbari warship during the war, and he's like the greatest tactician ever, and everyone wants him to like do stuff for them, and aliens come all the way to Babylon 5 just to talk to him or to try to kill him. And it's like, okay, so he's incredibly over-candied, and he's kind of a bully. He's just not, I don't like him. I don't think he's very interesting. He has a not very interesting romance. So let's, instead of bringing on this guy, especially, let's say that after Commander Sinclair leaves, they promote Ivanova instead. Because, frankly, Babylon 5, by this point, is kind of seen as a failure anyway. Like, the Earth government sees it as being kind of a backwater and, like, an idea that seemed good at the time but isn't really panning out. So it doesn't super make sense to me that they would send, like, their vaunted war hero there anyway. So instead we've got Ivanova, and this changes a few things, because Sheridan is, like, again, he's supposed to be super experienced and basically super good at everything. Whereas Ivanova is significantly, even though she's like clearly capable, she's younger and less experienced, and significantly, part of her character is that she's supposed to be impulsive, which is hilarious because Sheridan loves to run off on half-cocked plans, even though that's not officially part of his character. So some of the things that he does actually fit with Ivanova better. And Ivanova has a problem like being diplomatic, which is great because Babylon 5 is a diplomatic station. So now you put her in that situation and she has to like immediately jump out of her comfort zone. And that's basically, you know, and then you can have the same arc of the Mimbari either thinking she's awesome or hating her, which is what they do with Sheridan, depending on which faction of the Mimbari it is. It's just you would have to have the event that precipitate it happen on screen, whereas in Sheridan's case, it happened in his backstory. And I think having it on screen would make more sense anyway, right? It would just, you know, it would hit home more if it, instead of having to constantly refer to this thing that happened that we never got to see.
Yeah, having an inexperienced and unsure, like, captain is something that like can really add to a show that is, it's surprising how infrequently it is done. Like, every show that has a captain really wants that captain to be like badass, But then they have to also make the captain unreasonable so they can add more conflict, right? Because mm-hmm. the captain has so much power over the plot. Whereas having a captain that, like, is just inexperienced and makes new mistakes is an easy way to fix that, and surprising that nobody wants to do it.
Right.
So I have a question for you, Orin. In this remake of it, who is in charge of Babylon 5 every time Commander Ivanova runs off to do a crazy mission? Because in the actual series, she's the XO, and therefore every mm-hmm, time mm-hmm. Sheridan runs off to do something stupid, she's the one holding down the fort. So who do we have holding down the fort from the main cast? Or do you bring in a different character?
Londo, obviously.
Londo?
Yeah, obviously, really? Londo. He is clearly administrative material.
Yes!
So I honestly don't think that it actually matters that much. Because, frankly, I'm of the opinion, after watching a lot of television shows, that the XO is an inherently flawed position.
Mm-hmm.
Because the XO is, in most television shows, is basically the backup captain. And so it's like, whenever you have a story that revolves around captain stuff, the captain does it, and then it's like the XO is kind of, what am I doing? And Riker has that problem. God knows Chakotay has that problem. That's part of the reason why Enterprise doesn't really have a second in command. It's like technically to Paul, but she's mostly there to do science.
Mm-hmm.
And like,
yeah.
That's why in Deep Space Nine, they give Kira her like Bajoran storylines, because they know that most of the command related decisions are going to be Sisko stories. And that's a problem with that Ivanova has, where like all of the cool command decisions are given to Sinclair, or not Sinclair, well, Sinclair when he's there, but then Sheridan for most of the show.
Right.
So frankly, I think you just need to, you know, add a new extra. Like, they can have, like, a background character who's the XO. The only problem with that is, television budget-wise, that might be difficult, because, like, the XO would have to be in a fair number of episodes, just logistically, and it might not make sense to hire a character to be in the main cast who doesn't actually do a whole lot. But they actually did that in Babylon 5, so, like, they have a main cast member who is barely in the show for a season.
Which one's that?
I think it's season 2, they have this fighter pilot who is technically main cast. He's in the credits,
Whoa. But
he barely does anything.
There's like two episodes with him.
Yeah, he's only there so that he can die at the end of season 2, I think it is, to like show the situation is serious now.
I think they probably hired him with plans that he'd be involved more, but then they had to do a lot more introduction for Sheridan because than they had originally planned, is my hunch.
That's possible. I mean,
the only weakness I see to this plan is like some of Ivanova's strongest episodes were where she's left in command while the commander is off station or incapacitated in some way. And that character rising up to take command when the person normally in charge isn't available is a fairly strong story type, and it benefits a lot from a character that you're already invested in being thrust into that position.
Yeah, I mean, practically speaking, it would probably be Garibaldi, would probably be the actual XO.
I can see that.
That's the only one, that's the only character I think who exists who could do it. So short of adding a new character, it would have to be him. The way that I see having her as the main character is that season 2 and 3 would largely be about Ivanova like making a name for herself, and like instead of the way it currently is, which is everyone comes to Babylon 5 expecting this giant badass who is Sheridan, it would be people come to Babylon 5 expecting a pushover from this inexperienced officer who was left in charge because the actual commander left. And so you spend 2 seasons of her building a name for herself, and then she can do basically the same thing that Sheridan does in season 4, where she's just a giant badass when they fight the Civil War against Earth. And but it feels like she earned it, right? Like that's, she has a real arc, whereas Sheridan is pretty much identical at the end of season 4 as when he started. Like, his biggest character change is that he got a Minbari girlfriend. That's like his arc, as far as I can tell. So that's me. I really want Commander Ivanova to be in charge.
She could have been the one to get the Minbari girlfriend. You know, there's no reason.
No, her girlfriend is her girlfriend is Talia Winters. I'll have you know.
Does she have a girlfriend canonically?
No, but like they,
I can't remember if she ever had a romance arc. It's been a while since I watched.
So they don't canonically have a romance, but they do have an episode. It's like almost right before Winters leaves, where they get really close and like really kind of lovey-dovey. And it's one of those where if this was a male-female, it would obviously be a romance. And there is there's even a bit of like fan lore that there's this weird jump cut in the middle of a scene where they're leaning close together, and there's a theory that they originally kissed and had to cut it out. Suppose the show creator has said that's not true, but you know, believe what you want to believe.
I buy that they may have been going towards that at least at some point, because I now recall an episode where they were all basically seeing ghosts. That was one of the stranger ones, and hers was, I believe, a former lover. Maybe that was the new character that came in the last season. I don't remember when this episode hit, but it was a woman on the main cast whose former lover, who I think died of a drug overdose, was coming back to, and they, like, had a lot of lovey-dovey stuff and settled their unresolved issues. But I can't remember if that was Ivanova or her replacement in the last season.
I'm pretty sure that was a season 5 replacement for Ivanova.
Dang it.
But, I mean, there's also, like, the show creator also, like, implied that they had more in the works for Ivanova and Winters, but then Winters' actress decided not to come back. So yeah. The Winters character just disappears.
They had a lot of actors drop and have to be replaced. Like,
they did.
Straight up replacements. Winters was replaced with Lita. Ivanova was replaced in the last season. Sinclair was replaced with Sheridan.
I think Jakar went through about 3 different assistants. So, yeah, that's not a job that I envy, having to make a show that the actors keep dropping out of.
Yeah. At least Londo never left.
That's true. It's true. Mike, do you have another one?
Let's see. The obvious one that none of us have mentioned so far is Hermione.
Yeah.
Yeah. We cannot end this episode without talking about Hermione.
Hermione is a superior character in many ways to Harry Potter.
Mm-hmm.
I can see why J.K. Rowling had Harry Potter, the boy who lived, be the focus of her story, especially when she first started and probably didn't have, like, the whole 7 books planned out, and it was, like, a very light, fluffy fantasy for young children. But as the series aged, Hermione would have been the stronger protagonist.
I do have to wonder how much, like, the focus on the prejudice in the book as being the sort of driver of the team evil. I have to wonder, like, how much of that sort of developed over the course of the book and how much was intended in the very first book. Because I feel like in the very first book, you know, they talk about him just being mean to wizards in general, and they introduce Ron, and Ron is from a wizarding family, but a poor wizarding family that he's, like, really made fun of. Whereas I feel like as the book evolves, it focuses more on just prejudice and oppression of muggles specifically, and people who come from muggle families, which clearly puts Hermione at the center of things.
Yep.
And I'm wondering that maybe there was some kind of, drift as the series went on.
Well, I'm personally shocked by the implication that maybe Rowling's didn't plan out all 7 books at once. I can't even imagine that.
Mm-hmm. I bet she wrote her epilogue when she wrote of the 7th book when she wrote the first book.
This is Okay, so I do think that there would need to be some changes if we were going to make Hermione the main character. I think either one of two things has to happen. Either you have to change the focus of the story so that it is not about learning magic, because that's a big focus of the, especially the early books, is like the difficulty of learning new spells. And Hermione's whole thing is that she learns spells just like that, right? Mm-hmm. And like, that's going to be really boring if that's what your conflict is focused on, and your main character's like, yeah, I got it, I'm done now. So you could either do one of two things. You could either make the conflict about something else and just have Hermione be a genius at magic. That's, you know, not unreasonable.
Yeah, to be fair, like, the kids are fighting challenges that the adults haven't been able to take care of. So I think they have the advantage of just letting her be a genius at magic, is it helps better explain why she is solving problems the adults have failed to solve.
Yeah. And the magic is always only just one tool for whatever the larger conflict of the book is.
Mm-hmm. I would caution another potential problem to having Hermione be the main character is that, as a rule, people tend to dislike child prodigy characters. You know, and like, granted, they're not all created equal, right? Like, not every child prodigy character has to be Wesley Crusher, but that is an archetype that's very risky.
I mean, we could just put Wesley Crusher as the protagonist in every story.
Yeah, okay.
There we go. Secondary characters who should be the protagonist. Wesley Crusher. Story? Any.
I'm sold. It's done and done. But the other option is that you could make it so that Hermione is still very smart and still, like, you know, knows everything about magic academically, but because she comes from a Muggle family, there is some, like, aspect of wizarding upbringing that the wizarding kids take for granted that she doesn't have. You know, in the same way that, like, if you take someone who, as a kid, like, didn't go to basic, didn't go to basic early child education and didn't learn to read, and put them in an Ivy League university, even if they are really, really smart and try really, really hard, they're going to be at a disadvantage because they didn't get that early stuff, right?
Right.
And you could do the same thing with Hermione. That's another, if you wanted to have the same, like, try-fail cycles for learning new spells, that's an option for Hermione. Okay, well, That'll end this segment on The Girl Who Lived, Hermione Granger and the Deathly Hallows, as I'm currently reading.
Wesley Crusher and the Deathly Hallows.
Oh no.
Actually, it wouldn't make it that far. It would get to about book five, and then he would, like, disappear into energy.
Yeah, that is basically what happens. Everyone, thank you for listening. If anything that we said piqued your interest, send us an email at podcast@mythcreants.com. Otherwise, we will talk to you next week.
There was a dragon with a pointy tail. He was bigger than a whale, and his breath was terrible. He scared the princess when he came around. Tried to burn the castle down, but she caught him by his tail. Then she tied him to a tree so the dragon couldn't fly. She told him he was mean, and it made the dragon cry. When he finally apologized, she offered him some tea. Accepted it graciously. Now he visits every weekend with the princess who saved herself.
This has been the Mythgreant Podcast. Opening closing theme, The Princess Who Saved Herself, by Jonathan Colton.